Hello. Bright blessings to my listeners. Welcome to the Medicine Path Podcast, Episode 7. So this being our seventh episode, I thought that it would be good to do a podcast on Manishwaswayishkodekon, the Seven Fires, the Seven Fires prophecy of the Anishinaabe. So, what I'm going to do is I've got a book that's been special to me since I was about, I think, 13 years old when I was first given a copy of this book, and it was written by one of the elders back home, Eddie Benton Benet. And chapter 13 of the book is what he wrote about the Seven Fires prophecy. So I'm just gonna read that chapter. The accounts of our life that have been handed down to us by our Ojibwe elders tell us that many years ago, seven major Ngunnawalkyg, or prophets, came to the Anishinaabe. They came at a time when the people were living a full and peaceful life on the northeastern coast of North America. These prophets left the people with seven predictions of what the future would bring. Each of these prophecies was called a fire, and each fire referred to a particular era of time that would come in the future. Thus, the teachings of the seven prophets are now called the Nishwaswayishkodekon, or the Seven Fires of the Ojibwe. The first prophet said to the people, "In the time of the first fire, the Anishinaabe nation will rise up and follow the sacred shell of the Madewan Lodge. The Madewan Lodge will serve as a rallying point for the people, and its traditional ways will be the source of much strength. The sacred Magus will lead the way to the chosen ground of the Anishinaabe. You are to look for a turtle-shaped island that is linked with the purification of the earth. You will find such an island at the beginning and end of your journey. There will be seven stopping places along the way. You will know that the chosen ground has been reached when you come to a land where food grows on the water. If you do not move, you will be destroyed." The second prophet told the people, "You will know the second fire because at this time the nation will be camped by a large body of water. In this time, the direction of the sacred shell will be lost. The Madewan will diminish in strength. A boy will be born to point the way back to the traditional ways. He will show the direction to the stepping stones to the future of the Anishinaabe people." The third prophet said to the people, "In the third fire, the Anishinaabe will find a path to their chosen ground, a land in the west to which they must move their families. This will be the land where the food grows on the water." The fourth fire was originally given to the people by two prophets. They came as one. They told of the coming of the light-skinned race. One of the prophets said, "You will know the future of our people by what face the light-skinned race wears. If they come wearing the face of Mekonisuan, or Brotherhood, there will come a time of wonderful change for generations to come. They will bring knowledge and articles that can be joined with the knowledge of this country. In this way, two nations will join to make a mighty nation. This new nation will be joined by two more, so that the four will form the mightiest nations of all. You will know the face of Brotherhood if the light-skinned race comes carrying no weapons, if they come bearing only their knowledge and a handshake." The other prophet said, "Beware if the light-skinned race comes wearing the face of Nibuan, or Death. You must be careful, because the face of Brotherhood and the face of Death look very much alike. If they come carrying a weapon, beware. If they come in suffering, they could fool you. Their hearts may be filled with greed for the riches of this land. If they are indeed your brothers, let them prove it. Do not accept them in total trust. You shall know that the face they wear is the one of death, if the rivers run with poison and the fish become unfit to eat. You shall know them by these many things." The fifth prophet said, "In the time of the fifth fire, there will come a time of great struggle that will grip the lives of all native people. At the waning of this fire, there will come among the people one who holds the promise of great joy and salvation. If the people accept this promise of a new way and abandon the old teachings, then the struggle of the fifth fire with the people will be with the people for many generations. The promise that comes will prove to be a false promise. All those who accept this promise will cause the near destruction of the people. The prophet of the sixth fire said, in the time of the sixth fire, it will be evident that the promise of the fifth fire came in a false way. Those deceived by this promise will take their children away from the teachings of the Chiyayuk, the elders. Grandsons and granddaughters will turn against the elders. In this way, the elders will lose their reason for living. They will lose their purpose in life. At this time, a new sickness will come among the people. The balance of many people will be disturbed. The cup of life will almost be spilled. The cup of life will almost become the cup of grief. At the time of these predictions, many people scoffed at the prophets. They then had mishkikinun and medicines to keep away sickness. They were then healthy and happy as a people. These were great people. These were the people who chose to stay behind on the great migration of the Anishinaabe. These people were the first to have contact with the light-skinned race, and they would suffer the most. When the fifth fire came to pass, the great struggle did indeed grip the lives of all native people. The light-skinned race launched a military attack on Indian people throughout the country, aimed at taking away their land and their independence as a free and sovereign people. It is now felt that the false promise that came at the end of the fifth fire was the materials and riches embodied in the way of life of the light-skinned race. Those who abandoned the ancient ways and accepted this new promise were a big factor in causing the near destruction of the native people in this land. When the sixth fire came to be, words of the prophet rang true as children were taken away from the teachings of the elders. The boarding school era of so-called civilizing Indian children had begun. The Ojibwe language and religion were taken from the children. The people started dying at earlier ages. They had lost their will to live and their purpose in living. In the confusing times of the sixth fire, it is said that a group of visionaries came amongst the Anishinaabe. They gathered all the priests of the Madewan Lodge, and they told the priests that the Madewan way was in danger of being destroyed. They gathered all the sacred bundles. They gathered all the Wigwa skulls that recorded the ceremonies. All these things were placed in a hollowed-out log from Manone, the ironwood tree. Men were lowered over a cliff by long ropes, and they dug a hole in the cliff and buried the log where no one could find it. Thus the teachings of the elders were hidden out of sight, but not out of memory. It was said that when the time came, the Indian people could practice their religion without fear, that a little boy would dream where the ironwood log full of sacred bundles and scrolls was buried. He would lead his people to the place. The seventh prophet that came to the people long ago was said to be different from the other prophets. He was young. He had a strange light in his eyes. He said, in the time of the seventh fire, Ushkri Madizik, new people, will emerge. They will retrace their steps to find what was left by the trail. Their steps will take them to the elders, who they will ask to guide them on their journey. But many of the elders will have fallen asleep. They will awaken to this new time with nothing to offer. Some of the elders will be silent out of fear. Some of the elders will be silent because no one will ask anything of them. The new people will have to be careful in how they approach the elders. The task of the new people will not be easy. If the new people will remain strong in their quest, the water drum of the Madewan Lodge will again sound its voice. There will be a rebirth of the Anishinaabe nation and a rekindling of old flames. The sacred fire will again be lit. It is at this time that the light-skinned race will be given a choice between two roads. If they choose the right road, then the seventh fire will light the eighth and final fire, an eternal fire of peace, love, brotherhood, and sisterhood. If the light-skinned race makes the wrong choice of roads, then the destruction which they brought with them in coming to this country will come back to them and cause much suffering and death to all the Earth's people. Traditional Mi'kmaq people of Ojibwe and people from other nations have interpreted the two roads that face the light-skinned race as the road to technology and the road to spiritualism. They feel that the road to technology represents a continuation of the headlong rush to technological development. This is the road that has led modern society to a damaged and seared earth. Could it be that the road to technology represents a rush to destruction? The road to spirituality represents the slower path that the traditional native people have traveled and are now seeking again. The earth is not scorched on this trail. The grass is still growing there. The prophet of the fourth fire spoke of a time when two nations will join and make a mighty nation. He was speaking of the coming of the light-skinned race and the face of brotherhood that the light-skinned brother could be wearing. It is obvious from the history of North America that this was not the face worn by the light-skinned race as a whole. That mighty nation spoken of in the fourth fire has never been formed. If we natural people of the earth could just wear the face of brotherhood, we might be able to deliver our society from the road of destruction. Could we make the two roads that today represent the two clashing worldviews come together from that mighty nation? Could a nation be formed that is guided by respect for all living things? Are we the new people of the seventh fire? So, that is the Seven Fires prophecy of the Anishinaabe as written in the Nishomas book by Edward Benton Benet. Now, just a few points, just a few of my own personal thoughts. Let's see here. Sorry, everyone. So, just talking about the two roads of the prophecy. Those, I don't feel like technology and technological advancement. I've never felt like that was the road to destruction. I've always felt like the road to destruction is the one that we can clearly see in the history when we look back at that fourth fire, and we see the domination of other people, and we see the beginnings of systemic oppression and destruction of beliefs, culture, and religion of other people instead of embracing you know, the children being taken away from indigenous people and put into the boarding schools to be, you know, quote, whitewashed, to be turned into Christians and having their ways stripped from them, you know. That's the path that caused the destruction in North America of people, and taking people away from their own ways, and destroying and dominating and breaking people down instead of embracing and building each other up. I feel like that's the two roads. One is that road of brotherhood, where we come together and we can embrace each other's differences and embrace each other's different cultures and just accept each other, versus the road where someone feels like they have to be superior and has to dominate someone else. I feel like that's the road of destruction. Anyway, these new people, these Oshkibi Mardisik, the new people. So, some of the other people that talk about the seventh fire prophecy, they talk about the people of the rainbow, or the rainbow warriors, the people that have come from everywhere. You know, that leaves a lot of room for interpretation. But it's a nice principle to consider, having everyone coming together in brotherhood and unity, and being able to work together So that's that's the seventh fire prophecy from the Meshulmas book by Eddie Benton Benet. Let's see, I've got a few other things here. Sorry, my page isn't loading. It is, it's just loading slowly. So, just coming back to the seventh fire. Oh, sorry. Just go back over. There we go. So it says here, the prophecies are fulfilled, but for the seventh. Along the great salt water in the east, life was full and rich for the people, the Anishinaabeg. After the seven prophets came to them, there were many large gatherings to discuss these predictions. Many people did not want to move away from their homes with their families and begin a long migration through strange lands. Some unselfishly supported those who believed in the power of the migration and the prophecies. They were ready to follow because they thought it was in some way part of Creator's plan. One group supported the plans to follow the Migas into the unknown lands of the setting sun, but they pledged to stay and care for the eastern fire of the people. They were called the Wabanokig, the people of the dawn, the Wabano Lodge. 500 years later, they would be among the first to be caught in the death and suffering of the light-skinned people would bring. By the time of the fourth fire, their homes, families, and villages would be torn apart. They would be scattered, lose their roots, their power. Today, these people are called the Abenaki. The U.S. government does not recognize their existence as a tribe. The people followed the great river to the setting sun, the St. Lawrence River, looking for the island shaped like a turtle. Near present-day Montreal, they found such an island, and the Migas shell rose up out of the water to greet them. There, they brought the sacred fire and did many ceremonies to cleanse themselves to be ready to receive their next instructions. After some time, they continued to follow the great river into a sweet water sea until they came to a roaring waterfall that spoke like thunder. And they called it Animikiwabu, place of the thundering water. Once again, the sacred Migas shell rose up out of the water and greeted them, and the sacred fire was brought here. Today, the light-skinned people call this place Niagara Falls. Again, the people moved on along another large sweetwater sea until they came to a narrow river that was cut deep into the earth. It was the river the first prophet had described. Many people were drowned trying to cross the river. When the people set up a village there, the sacred Migas rose up out of the water to greet them. That river today is called the Detroit River. At this time, there came to be three groups among the Anishinaabeg. Each group had a special task. One group, called the Odawak, were responsible for providing the people with their food and supplies. These were the hunters and traders. A second group, the Odewatomi, were the keepers of the sacred fire as the people moved along. The third group were the faith keepers of the nation, called the Ojibwe. Today, the Odawak are called the Odawa. The Odewatomi are called the Ishkodewatomi or Potawatomi. And the Ojibwe are called the Ojibwe, or incorrectly, Chippewa. These were the nations of the three fires, powerful and united by a common purpose, following the sacred Migas to an unknown destination. The nations of the three fires were asked to join war expeditions against the light-skinned invaders in the east, but they remained focused on their mission and their destiny, whatever that was to be. They followed the Sisagwad, the soft whisper of spirit, knowing not where it would take them. At the time of the second fire, the people were encamped along the east shore of the third Sweetwater Sea. They searched for a way to cross the sea to continue their journey in search of the food that grows on water. Here they stayed for a long time, establishing villages and planting gardens. In attending to basic survival needs, people began to neglect the sacred ways and soon forgot their journey. Only a few of the elders still remembered the purpose of their migration. Then a little boy had a dream about a path of stones that would lead across the waters. They returned to the river that cuts like a knife and retraced their steps. There they found a chain of islands that led across the Sweetwater Sea. Moving the people by canoe, they continued their westward journey in search of the food that grows on water. On the largest island in the chain, the sacred Migas appeared to the people, rising out of the water. This island became the center of the Anishinaabeg Nation. The sacred fire was brought here. The sacred water drum of the Medewan Society was heard again. Then the water drum was moved to the eastern shore of another Sweetwater Sea, and the sacred Migas appeared again. Here the people had their first contact with the light-skinned people, French explorers, voyageurs, and traders, called the Adewiwinik. These people brought many gifts, metal knives, axes, kettles, and pots, woven cloth and coats, colored glass beads. These people came in brotherhood and seemed to be friendly and respectful of the ways of the people. These people were treated as brothers, and many of them married women of the Anishinaabeg. They were adopted into the nation. It was the beginning of the fourth fire. In the east, other light-skinned people would come wearing the face of death. These people destroyed many villages of the people of the Dawn who had remained along the Great Salt Water. They destroyed the garden paradise of the Anishinaabe that had been tended for thousands of years. These people seemed not to know how to be in balance, and yet they believed that their way was the best and the only way to live. Groups of the Anishinaabe traveled along the north and south shores of the Fourth Sweetwater Sea, and reaching a bay at the western end, they found Monomen, a wild rice, food that grows on water. The destination had been reached. Spirit Island in the bay was the sixth stopping place. Not very far away, along the southern shore, the Great Sweetwater Sea, they found an island that was shaped like a turtle, the final sign that the journey was complete. They placed Nansema tobacco on the shore as an offering to the Great Spirit who had led them to this holy place. They called the island Moningwalkening. This became the capital of a powerful Anishinaabeg nation, and the Great Sweetwater Sea was called Kishiojibwegaming, the Great Sea of the Ojibwe, called Kichigumi in Longfellow's poem Hiawatha. The sacred Migas rose up out of the waters and told them they had reached their destination and now they must continue to follow the path of the spirit so they could light the path in the time of the seventh fire. Here they brought the sacred fire and the sacred water drum sounded for many years. The prophecy of the first, second, and third prophets had been realized and the prophecy of the fourth prophet continued to unfold. Light-skinned men in long black robes, Makadakaniak, came clutching a black book to their chests, carrying something that seemed to honor the four directions. These men were impressed with the generosity, honor, and respect shown by the Anishinaabeg. Still, they wanted the Anishinaabeg to change their ways and accept the teachings from a man far away. They warned that not following this book, they would not be able to walk the path of souls to the star web to join their relatives. This was very frightening to many of the people who they left their traditional ways to follow the black coats and their black book. A wedge was driven between the people of the Medewan Society and the people following the new teaching. The conflict between people of the black book and the people of the sacred Migas split the community into factions that broke the circle of the nation. People scattered to smaller lakes of Wisconsin and Minnesota. Thus began the time of the fifth fire. The wave of light-skinned people forced all of native people into poverty on tiny reservations supported by erratic deliveries of promised supplies and equipment. These were usually rotten, poor quality, or insufficient to take care of the needs of the people. To educate the children in new ways, the light-skinned people took children away from their parents, put them in boarding schools far away from their homes and families, cut their hair, took away their medicine bundles, forbade the use of their native language. So the hoop of the nation was broken. Taking the young people away from the medicines, the stories, the teachings, the spirit ways, the strength that had brought a spirit-filled people on a journey for more than 600 years. The children were taught to walk the way of the light-skinned people, who taught that theirs was the superior way, the way of progress. This was the time of the sixth fire. Children were turned against their parents and their grandparents. The teachings of the elders were not heard, and the elders grew sick. They had lost their place in the circle. The circle was broken. The weapons used by the light-skinned were untrue stories, racism, guns and bayonets, cannons and disease. Today the weapons are courts, attorneys, textbooks, and schools that teach propaganda as history, movies and television that portray the way of native people in a shallow and untrue way, and still sometimes guns and bayonets. Now is the time of the seventh fire. By the light of the seventh fire come the Ogichidok, those who had used their power and strength and wisdom and gentleness to bring harmony and balance. They will soar, the Wibishkiginu, the white eagle, bringing the wisdom of spirit with the first light of day. They will learn of their power and strength like the Kichimakwa, the great bear who holds ice and snow in the north so the earth could not be covered in water. And they will open their mind and heart like Mekonok, the turtle, who offered his back upon which to build a new earth. So, that is just another reading or some points on the seven grandfather teachings, the seventh fire prophecy. And that is from, I lost my page here. That is actually a PDF from CID.ca, and the PDF is called Sevfire 013108. There's lots and lots and lots of different things that people have written about the seven fires that are all over the internet. There's videos on YouTube from different nations across from the East Coast all the way out to Minnesota. I encourage you, if the seven fires prophecy spoke to you in any way, to do some more research. go ahead and see what you can find on the internet. There's a lot of good stuff all over out there. You can just Google the Seven Fires Prophecy of the Anishinaabe or of the Ojibwe, and you'll find lots of good stuff. So that's just one more time. That's the Seven Fires Prophecies from the Meshomas book by Edward Benton Benet, and also a little bit of my own thoughts, and that's the Seven Fires Prophecy. I feel like that's a good seventh episode of the Medicine Path podcast. With that, we can conclude episode 7. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to listen to the Medicine Path podcast. I hope that you were able to take something good away from this. Please feel free, as always, to suggest new topics, ask me questions, leave feedback. Brightest blessings. Bama pimin wakwa manijikwinok.